So as I said, today is the disappearance day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Generally, when someone close to us dies, we are very sad. But Srila Prabhupada explained to us that the great Vaishnavas, their activities are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. This is called prakat and aprakat lila. And both are relishable. In one sense, there is nothing to lament. The pure devotee comes into this world on the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does the will of the Lord, and then he returns to the spiritual world where he engages in his nitya lila or eternal pastimes with Krishna. So certainly there is nothing to lament about that. But on the other side, it is we who feel very sad to lose the association of such a great personality. We are willing to take to spiritual life, but we are very weak. Mama Maya Duratyaya. Krishna says, this Maya is my energy and it is very powerful. Everybody who comes into this world is overcome by illusion. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. And we have millions of desires to fulfill. Apuryamanamachala pratishtam samudramapa pravishanti yadvat. Just like so many rivers are entering into the ocean, so many desires are coming in my mind. The mind is constantly accepting and rejecting. This is called sankalpa and vikalpa. Sun like in sankirtan, and vikarma means, or vikalpa means to reject. Just like vikarma means sinful activity or rejected activity. So the mind is seeing things in the world through the senses. It brings them inside and it creates some kind of enjoyment, just like they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. The person who is seeing may think, oh, this painting is so beautiful. And someone else may think, ah, it's just a bunch of colors on canvas. What is it? Or modern art today. Somebody will throw some paint on the floor and then throw some nails and some potato chips and and then he'll get naked and jump all over it, and then he'll submit it to an art competition and win first prize. There's a English saying, everyone to his own taste, said the old lady as she kissed the pig. In the same way, the mind is expert at enjoying different things in the material world. And after some time, when one is bored, one rejects that thing. So, one who is aspiring to be a transcendentalist, he has to learn how to withdraw his mind from this illusion, from this game. Arjuna asks Krishna, how can I know what a transcendental person is like? Everybody wears clothes. Everybody has eyes and ears and arms. Most people have hair. How can I identify a transcendentalist? And Krishna says, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atmani evatmana tushta stita pragyas tadochate. When a man stops trying to invent false pleasure, frankly, we're all bored to death in this world. So we have to invent things every year. Newer and newer things to keep us distracted. But even still, we're losers. Because the body gets older. My tongue tastes because it has nerves in it. The experience of taste is because the network of nerve endings in the tongue. So as I get older, the nerve endings become dull. And I can't taste the same way I did when I was young. I can't hear the same way when I was young. I can't smell, I can't see, I can't touch in the same way. I had a grandfather who lived to be 96 years old. Anybody had old grandfathers here? Huh? Any octogenarians? 100 years? Over 90? Anybody over 90? Yeah. He was basically senile. He was a great guy. But he was just a little cuckoo. Cuckoo! An expression. A cuckoo is a little bird that goes cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. So, anyway, He used to sit around the kitchen table in our house every day, drinking, I don't know, gin and 7-Up or vodka and orange juice. I don't know what he drank. And singing songs to himself and laughing. Nobody paid any attention to him. He couldn't taste his food. He could hardly see. So I was once talking to him about his life. And one thing he did say, he said, "My life is kind of like a dream." He was 96 years old. So he said, "I remember when I was a young man of 15 in Ireland. I remember when I joined the Irish army. I played the bagpipes." You know what bagpipes are? Huh? Does everyone know what bagpipes are? Like, that's bagpipes. Yeah, I thought it was only an Irish, but it's actually an Indian instrument. You see it in India. It's very old. He said, "I remember when I wore a kilt." We're not the only one who wears a dress, so don't. He said, "But it's just a memory. I remember when I got married. I remember when I drove a taxi. I remember when we moved to Canada. But it's just a memory now." I thought that was pretty interesting. So we have to learn how to control our mind and make the mind our friend. Your mind can be your best friend or your worst enemy. You can have all wealth, all beauty, all strength, all fame, all knowledge, and still be miserable if your mind is disturbed. Look at the wealthy countries in the world. America has more money and more things to spend the money on than any other country in the world. Something like 60% of the world's wealth is in America, owned by a small number of people. But America's not happy. They have more crime, more suicide, more drug addiction, more prostitution, more problems than anyone. Someone, there's a question, if you're qualified after about 7 or 8 months of chanting, you get to take a 13 question test. Basically the test is, who is Krishna? Who is Srila Prabhupada? One of the questions is, what are the qualifications for being a bona fide spiritual master? So someone recently answered, He should have all wealth, all beauty, all strength, all fitness. I thought that was funny. Some people think like that. The richest guy, he should be my guru. Anyway, if you don't learn how to control your mind by chanting Hare Krishna. Kriteya dhyayato Vishnum kretayam yajato makai dvaparo paricharyadhyam kalo tad hari kirtanat. In Kali Yuga, the method of self-realization is japa yajna. Sankirtan yajna. If you want to pretend, then you can do meditation. So many people want to do meditation, but it's not meditation. It's imitation. They pretend that they're like a big yogi in the mountains of Himalayas. You ought to go to the Himalayas sometime. See some of those people who stay there. They're awesome. You don't have this word awesome? In the middle of the winter, which is cold, in the winter in the Himalayas, when you spit, it freezes before it hits the ground. That's cold. If you touch any metal with your bare hand, don't think about taking your hand away. It is now merged with the metal. That's cold. And these yogis, they actually live there naked. Maybe they wear a kopan. A really warm kopan, you know what I mean? The latest model from the USA. Made in down. Special down kopan. You know, down duck feathers and whatever, they make these jackets, that's called down. Anyway. What they do is they cover their body in ashes from a fire. And they practice meditation. But in Kali Yuga it's not possible. And neither is yajna. I was just reading about Yudhisthira's Ashwamedha yajna after the battle of Kurukshetra. So they were feeling a little poor because they only had a few billion dollars. So Vyasadeva told Arjuna that just at the foothills of the Himalayas there was a cave in which there was practically a mountain of gold there that had been left there by one ancient king. And so Arjuna went there and got all of that wealth and brought it back. But today, you know, they had, Arjuna brought back all these gold plates. People actually ate off of golden plates. And when they were finished the meal, they threw it away because it was dirty. It was juta, contaminated. Americans are so proud of their wealth. But they eat from plastic plates. And then they save it for another day. There's no comparison. The only process is this chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So one of the greatest preachers in the modern times was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said he was the actual founder of the modern Krishna consciousness movement. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born on September 2nd, 1838. He was born in a very, very wealthy family. His family were Shaktas, or worshippers of Lord Shiva. They had land in Calcutta, land all over Bengal, land in Orissa, and they were very wealthy. But as a young boy, disaster struck his family, and many of his relatives, and in fact the village where he was born, most of the people were killed by a plague. So he ended up in a relatively poor condition. So he spent a good part of his life at his maternal uncle's place. As a young man, he was sent to Calcutta to study in the best schools. And he turned out to be a brilliant student. But at that time, Bengal and the whole of India was under British rule. And the British knew that if they were to actually defeat India, they would have to make them Christians and teach them English. So they had clubs where they would honor Indians who gave up their own culture and became proper British gentlemen. They even had meat-eating clubs, just like we have our vegetarian clubs. They were the other way around. So anyway, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was influenced by the young Bengalis of the time. And he studied the so-called great literatures of the West. He read Plato, he read James Joyce. He read so many philosophical books from the West, as well as some Indian literatures. But the commentaries were decidedly, they were very much slanted towards Western ideas. In fact, there were many Sanskrit scholars both in the United Kingdom and in Germany who studied the Indian scriptures just to find fault with them. So, in his youth, he did not get much of an opportunity to participate in the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But at one point, he somehow got a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita written by a Vaishnava, and he was so impressed with it that his whole life changed. Now at that time, as I said, most Indians considered Krishna a god of love. Who had many girlfriends and was quite illicit in his activities. And those who were chanting Hare Krishna were seen as people who could not do anything else. They were just parasites. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by his preaching, single-handedly renovated our Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition. Early on in his life, he became a teacher by profession. And he was the first one to introduce English education in Orissa. Later on, he joined the government service and was appointed a district magistrate, which was the highest post that any Indian could hold in the British government. He was such a powerful person that he was practically the best magistrate that the British had. While all other magistrates had years or at least months of cases pending, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was completely up to date, and he often finished his work early and went home. He was a very gentle person. He was a very magnanimous person. He was very conscious of other people's feelings. He never spoke harshly. He never committed offenses against others, even in a word, what to speak of action. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a grihastha. He had 10 children. So If you want to follow Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you can have a big family. His first wife died, and he married a second time. One of his sons, who later turned out to be Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, criticized his father that he was a stri sanghi. Stri sanghi means someone interested in the association of women or material enjoyment. He tried to advise his father not to marry again. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a Naishtika Brahmachari. He didn't pass semen from his body his whole life. So anyway, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had many amazing events in his life as a magistrate. In one town where he was transferred, there was a local incarnation of Mahavishnu named Vishikashena. He had some shakti. He had big hair, and he had some shakti, some potency. Even in our Western tradition, we know about Samson and Delilah. You know that story, Samson and Delilah? Samson had big, long hair, and he was very powerful, could defeat any warrior. And then Delilah cut off his hair, and he was immediately defeated. In India also, sages who practice austerity, they get some kind of power which is controlled in their hair. I don't know what it is, but there's one fellow in South India who has a big afro haircut. You probably heard of him. I won't say his name. But he is a little short guy. I mean, I met him once. He went like this and some ashes fell from his hand. I said, "Let's see you lift a mountain with your little finger." He couldn't do it. So I said, "Show me your universal form." He couldn't do it. I asked him for a gold watch. He gave me a Casio. Actually, one of our members, I forget his name. His name is Lal, Mr. Lal. He's one of the most famous magicians in India. Sometimes musicians are magicians too, but like our Prabhu here, he's an expert magician, singer. But anyway, this Mr. Lal, he is our very good friend of Srila Prabhupada and good life member. So he went to see Sai, and so he was in a darshan, and Sai produced a rasgulla for all the foreigners and all the Croatians who were there and everything. All the people from Dubrovnik. And so Mr. Lal produced a rasgul. And every trick that Sai Baba did, this guy also did the same trick. And finally Sai Baba said, "Hey, you're ruining my act. Get out of here."
Svaki trik koji izdao Sai Baba, on je isto tako izdao. Na kraju je Sai Baba rekao, "Kvariš mi točku, bježi odavde."
We actually have a video.
Zapravo imamo video.
Where there's some big minister.
Gdje je neki veliki ministar.
And Sai Baba's got a plate.
Sai Baba ima
tanjir. And he has a garland on top of the plate.
A garland na vrhu tanjira.
So he gives him the garland, and at the same time also he reaches underneath the plate, and he grabs a little necklace, and you can see it on the video, it's very clear, and then he pretends that he brought it out of nowhere. So this Vishikashena, he was Mahavishnu, but he also engaged in Rasa Leela. And unfortunately, he polluted many of the local young girls, much to the chagrin of their fathers, much to the anger of their fathers. He actually had some shakti. He could bring sparks from his hair, and people were afraid of him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought him in court, and he prosecuted him. He wasn't afraid. A Vaishnava should never be afraid. What is Srila Prabhupada's name? Abhay, fearless. Because Krishna is the supreme controller. Not a blade of grass can move in the world without God's wanting it. And Krishna will protect you in every way. You have nothing to fear at any time. Even if it seems like there's difficulty. You have nothing to fear because Krishna will help you. We have to have that faith. So everybody warned Bhaktivinoda Thakur not to prosecute Vishikashena. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't care. He sentenced him to 1.5 years in jail. That same day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur got very sick. And his whole family became very ill with a very mysterious illness. High temperature, weakness. But Bhaktivinoda didn't care. He went on with his bhajan. Vishikashena was put in jail. They don't allow long hair in jail. Shaved it all off. Left him a shika. And he died within a few months. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was okay the next day. There were other instances, like in another village there was a bogus Balaram. Sounds good, bogus Balaram. He prosecuted him. Bhaktivinoda went to Vrindavan. At that time, Vrindavan was one of the worst areas in India for thieves. So thieves would catch them on the road. So Bhaktivinoda spent a number of months there. He organized the local authorities and kicked all of the, or arrested and drove out all of the thieves from Vrindavan. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur he had a daily schedule. Now, there's a little variation on this from different sources, but this is generally his schedule. He would get home in the evening about 5 o'clock. Then from 5 to 7 p.m., he would translate Sanskrit scriptures to Bengali. So 2 hours. Then from 7 to 8 p.m., he would take bath, prasadam, which was half a liter of milk, a little rice, and 2 chapatis. That was his meal. Then from 8 to 10 p.m. he would rest for 2 hours. Interestingly enough, medicine says that your body only needs 2 hours sleep to rejuvenate. 2 hours of deep sleep. At 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. he would write. From 4 a.m. to 4:30 he would take rest for half an hour. From 4:30 to 7 he would chant japa. 64 rounds. From 7 to 7:30 he would do correspondence. From 7:30 in the morning to 9:30 he would study various scriptures. From 9:30 to 10 again bath and prasadam, half a liter of milk, fruit, and 2 chapatis. That was it for the day. How did he get a big body? He was eating sweets on the side? No. He just had a big body. But he was actually very austere. From 10 to 1, he would do his court duty. 1 to 2 p.m. he would be at home. And again, 2 to 5 court duties. So every day he slept 3 hours. Srila Prabhupada also slept about 3 and a half hours a day. He wrote books 8 and a half hours a day. He did japa and study 4 and a half hours. And he worked for 6 hours. He wrote over 100 authorized spiritual books. He discovered the appearance place of Lord Chaitanya. And he started the Namahatta Sangha, which is described in the Gudrum Kalpa to be a small booklet. And he wrote so many songs and poems which are just dripping with nectarian devotion for Krishna. You can feel his ecstasy in his poems and songs. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to pray to the holy name that my dear holy name Prabhu, please forgive me. I feel that my chanting is offensive and I am bruising your body. So that was his mood. And these great devotees like Bhaktivinoda Thakur can never be imitated. But we should appreciate their activities and try to follow in their footsteps. That means if he wrote 100 books, we can try to write one book. He discovered the appearance place of Lord Chaitanya. We should try to find a permanent place for a temple in Split. Like that. So he wrote a number of very famous books. One of his earliest books was called Sri Krishna Samhita, which is a complete explanation of Krishna's personality as the cause of all causes. As I said, the educated people of the world and the educated people of Bengal had a very poor understanding, a very poor opinion of Krishna. So Bhaktivinoda wrote in such a way to establish Krishna's identity. Just like Srila Prabhupada said, when you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, you should not go directly to the 10th canto, and especially the Gopi Gita in the 30th chapters. Because it will be, this is a gross example, but it will be like some big man trying to have intercourse with a 5-year-old girl. She is not in any way ready or mature. And similarly, we are not at all ready to understand the 10th canto without first understanding the 9 cantos. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote this Sri Krishna Samhita. Then he wrote one of his most famous books called Kalyana Kalpataru Sri Chaitanya Sikshamrita. Sri Chaitanya Sikshamrita. Anyway, Kalyana Kalpataru. It's an amazing book describing the teachings of Lord Chaitanya.
He
wrote Navadvipa Mahatmya, Jaiva Dharma, Harinam Chintamani, Bhajan Rahasya, Gita Mala, Gitavali, Sharanagati. All these last three are very ecstatic books of poems and songs. He wrote commentaries on both the Bhagavad Gita and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He also established the Vishwa Vaishnav Raja Sabha. And there were so many achievements of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Most important is that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur made three predictions concerning a person and a phenomena that would take place. Quote, a personality will soon appear and he will travel all over the world to spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. This was predicted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. His second prediction was, very soon the chanting of Harinam Sankirtan will spread all over the world. When will that day come when people from America, England, France, Germany, Russia will take up kartals and mridangas and chant Hare Krishna in their towns? The third prediction, when will that day come when the fair-skinned foreigners will come to Sri Mayapur Dham and join the Bengali Vaishnavas to chant Jai Sachinandan, Jai Sachinandan,
Jai Sachinandan.
In 1974, we had the first Mayapur festival, and it was so ecstatic to see Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prediction come true. And then in 1986, on the 500th anniversary of Mahaprabhu, over 3,000 Vaishnavas from China, Russia, every corner of the earth got together and chanted Jai Sachinanda. Interesting thing is that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent one of his own books to the West. It was a book of verses glorifying Lord Chaitanya. Along with that, there was a very long booklet called Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts. His Life and Teachings. This book went to many major universities around the world. That was in
1896.
Srila Prabhupada also took birth in 1896. So it's very significant. What would be the mission of Srila
Prabhupada?
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur never took sannyasa. He remained a grihastha all his life. And then sometime in 1908-1909, he took Babaji initiation and retired at Puri. He met people and gave his instructions. Actually, originally, he was initiated by one Vipin Bihari Goswami, who was in the line of Janava Devi, who was a guru and acharya in our line. She was the wife of Nityananda Gosai. So, he actually had some little disagreement with Vipin Bihari. Something about his teachings not being exactly to the mark. Some little contamination, Mayavad contamination. So he took siksha from Jagannath Das Babaji. And he also, in other words, Jagannath Das Babaji was not the Diksha Guru of Bhakti Vinod, but he is in our parampara line. And similarly, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji took siksha from Bhakti Vinod and is also in our line. So this is a strong point that the essence of diksha is siksha. Although we have to follow the tradition, but we should not be bewildered by the external form. We should try to understand the essence. So anyway, Bhaktivinoda, in 1910, he completely went into samadhi. He stopped talking to anyone, simply engaged in his bhajan. And in 1914, on the appearance day of Gadadhar, Bhaktivinoda Thakur left this world. So it was a very auspicious life. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki. Now, just to finish off this evening, I know it's late. But I'd like to... ran into some statistics. I think you remember that I told you the other day that statistics are important. What's his name? No, not George Bernard. The American. Mark Twain said there are lies. There are damn lies and there are statistics. But anyway, if we took the whole population of the world and we reduced everything to a village of 100 people with all the existing human ratios the same, ratio means this is what you would have in the village of 100 people. There would be 57 Asians, 21 Europeans, 14 people from the Western Hemisphere, that's both North and South, and there would be 8 Africans. So Westerners are so proud of their civilization, but most of the world's population is Asian. They're actually real people. They have flesh and blood. They have families. They have intelligence. Half of IBM are Indians and Chinese. Here's a good statistic for you. 52 would be female and 48 would be male. So that means that men can take many wives, right? No, that's not what it means. It means that more than half the world's population is female. And they should be properly protected, not ignored or abused. 70 would be non-white, and 30 would be white. 70 would be non-Christian, and 30 would be Christian. So, you always thought that Christians were the biggest thing happening in the world. But there are more than twice as many non-Christians in the world. That's taking into account atheists, of course. Here's a heavy one. 11 would be homosexuals. That's the state of the world today. 6 people would possess 59% of the entire world's wealth. And all 6 would be from the U.S. 80 would live in substandard housing. 70 would be unable to read. 50 would suffer from malnutrition. 1 would be near death. And 1 would be near birth. 1. Only 1 would have a college education. And 2 would own a computer. So there's a great need in the world for understanding, for acceptance and education of other cultures. This is information from Stanford University School of Medicine. So, sometimes, because we're small, We don't feel so much enthusiasm. In fact, we try to hide ourselves. I know devotees who live in a city where there is a temple, who will be in the temple in their dhoti and kurta. They'll be asked to go to the corner store two blocks away to buy some milk. They'll put on their blue jeans and shirt with a hat just to go to the store. And then when they come back to the temple, they'll change into their sadhu suit. We have got the very best spiritual technology. We have the best philosophy. We have the best culture. Nobody can even sit down and talk with us. We can easily defeat anyone. Why should we be ashamed? The sari is one of the most beautiful dresses in the world. And dhoti and kurta are actually much more comfortable than tight blue jeans. They're very simple. You don't have to change your style every 6 months. And going with no hair is actually really neat in the summertime. In the winter, you can wear a cap. So, there is a need for us to understand what is happening in the world. And there is a need for people to understand what we have to give. Unless people take up Krishna consciousness, our present civilization is headed to annihilation. At least very great suffering. So it is up to us to try to help them. Lastly, I would like to thank very much our host, Lori Prabhu, who so kindly invited us into her house. We totally took over everything. The living room, the bedroom, the refrigerator, everything. And I would like to thank Nandarani Prabhu and she also had the able assistance of Vedrana and not very good with names, I'm sorry. I really, really felt well taken care of here, and you know, my heart is just, I'm very indebted to all of you. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to chant with you and share Krishna consciousness with you. I hope we'll see all of you again someday. I hope our paths cross.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur Tirubhav Mahamahotsav ki. Lord Premanandi.
Srila Siddhartha Swami ki.